This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Casey Morabito. Don't tell me it's gonna be all right. You can't sell me on your optimism that I don't tell me it's gonna be all right. You can't sell me on your optimism tonight. Our president is notorious for accidentally providing critics with countless odd quotes ripe for satire. One such remark made during his first term went,
"This would be a heck of a lot easier if this was a dictatorship, just so long as I was a dictator."
That was a little worrisome for some folks. With the highest number yet of fatalities due to insurgent bombings in Iraq this past month, even some fellow Republicans, Senators Lindsey Graham and Chuck Hagel, among others, are beginning to question the rigidity of our leadership. The September 11, 2001 attack left Americans fearful. The question is, was that fear exploited to accommodate a premeditated neoconservative agenda? Are we being led or controlled? Contrary to the system of checks and balances prescribed by the framers of the United States Constitution, currently the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of our government are all controlled by the Republican Party. In an examination of the dictatorships of Mussolini, Franco, and Suharto, Lawrence Britt identifies 14 common characteristics of these regimes that may seem disturbingly familiar. These features include
disdain for the recognition of human rights,
and that calls to mind Abu Ghraib and disrespect for the Geneva Convention,
controlled mass media,
calls to mind invitation-only town hall meetings and paid or planted reporters such as Armstrong Williams and Jeff Gannon, a.k.a. James Guckert.
Obsession with national security.
Even Tom Ridge is retroactively questioning all those pre-election orange alerts.
And the protection of corporate power.
Well, credit companies were allowed to rewrite our bankruptcy laws, and the pharmaceutical giants rewrote the Medicaid rules. Democracy tolerates scrutiny and questions, and Americans have the right and duty to practice both. The title of Howard Zinn's autobiography tells everything about his commitment to speaking truth to power. That title, You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train. Now back to Kathy and Howard Zinn.
I was talking to someone yesterday in these offices, and I was comparing Vietnam to now. And I mentioned that I think one of the differences that I see in those of us who are opposed to the war is that it wasn't clear towards the end of Vietnam when the movement to stop the war had caught fire. It wasn't clear that we were not against the soldiers. It was muddied together. You were against the government's position and the soldiers, unfortunately. And I think now we've made it much clearer that we're not at all angry at the people who went over.
But, you know, I think the muddiness did not come out of the anti-war movement. I think the attitude of the anti-war movement, and I was, you know, involved in that movement against the Vietnam War from the beginning, so many demonstrations, and I never knew anybody in the anti-war movement who was anti-soldier, who would revile the soldiers who fought. I mean, there may have been a few people here and there, but I think that the government spread the notion that the anti-war movement was spitting on the soldiers and insulting the soldier. I think that was real successful propaganda, which, as you say, muddied the situation. I think if our consciousness of that today that makes us clarify as strongly as we can the fact that we are not against the GIs at all. In fact, we are on their side. We want them to live. We don't want them to lose arms and legs and become blinded in the war. We want them to come home and be with their families. We are on their side.
Howard, when you see things that are coming out of the administration, Wolfowitz being put in charge of the World Bank, Bolton, a fellow who's declared hated the UN, is now going to be our ambassador to the UN. I found a website, Project for the Old American Century, that has listed, I believe it's 14 points of what it is like to live under fascism. And so many of the points remind me of what I've been seeing over the last few years. Just a few of them. One, powerful and continuing nationalism. Two, disdain for the recognition of human rights. Three is identification of enemies and scapegoats. It talks about corporate power protected, religion and government intertwined, and controlled of mass media. Where is the outrage? Why are we asleep? Why aren't we out there in the streets like we were during Vietnam?
Well, sure, we should be outraged, of course, and you're right that there are these frightening elements of fascism that we are seeing today in the United States. But when we ask why are people not out in the streets, we should remember that when the war in Vietnam was 2 years old, we did not yet have mass demonstrations. It took a while for that to develop. And I remember early on when at least some of us knew that we were committing atrocities in Vietnam, and we were saying, why aren't people outraged? Well, they became outraged when they learned what was happening. It took a while for them to learn. Now, the fact is that today, it's 2 years after the start of the war in Iraq, and there are people all over this country, in hundreds of cities over this country, who are demonstrating against the war. So people are waking up. It's a process, and it's a matter of being patient and persistent and having the faith that if you continue telling the truth about what is going on, that more and more and more people are going to express their outrage.
I'm wondering if you see the pendulum swinging back by the end of this administration.
Well, let's put it this way. I do think that this administration has been so bad, so obviously ruthless in its disregard for human life abroad and here, so obvious in its pandering to the great corporations. I mean, look at the Senate voted to open up more land for exploration of oil, and I mean, so blatant in the destruction of the environment. I think that by the time this administration is done, it will have aroused the country against these policies.
Do you have any feelings yourself as to who you would like to see in control of the government next time out?
Who I would like to see in control?
Howard Zinn, Anthony.
Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, any of those guys.
Barbara Ehrenreich, Molly
Fine.
Ivins.
I'd be happy with any of those. Molly would at least be funny.
Yes. And deliberately so, as
yes.
opposed to our president. Yeah, his distortion of language is not as serious as his distortion of moral values and his insistence that God is telling him what to do. That's the most serious thing.
Yeah, it has appeared that Christianity has been so used as a divisive mechanism. If the historic Jesus could come back, I'm sure he'd hire a lawyer to put forth a libel suit or something.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, I think that the fundamentalists who are supporting Bush are not, despite the fact they call themselves a moral majority, they're not the majority of the country. They're a relatively small, although they might be as much as 15 or 20% of the country. But I think there are many, many people who are religious, but who are not captives of the fundamentalist right, and I think who can understand that Jesus, the Bible, the religion, and so on, do not countenance what is going on today. I mean, after all, the Ten Commandments are pretty clear, you know. And, you know, thou shalt not kill is there. I mean, you don't have to have an extensive religious training to understand that killing is wrong, whether from a secular or religious point of view. And we have people in the religious community, after all. I mean, well, you know that better than I do. We have so many people in the religious community who interpret the Bible, who interpret the religious teachings, who interpret the prophets in a way that supports the idea of human rights and the equality of people everywhere. And, you know, we have Protestant theologians like Jim Wallis and Harvey Cox. And, of course, we have the Catholic left, and we have Dan Berrigan and Liz McAllister and the people at Jonah House. And, you know, we have religious people all over the country, and so many of them are in jail for protesting.
Yeah, we just sent a sister, a Maryknoll sister, to Danbury Women's Prison just yesterday for 6 months for protesting at the School of the Americas down in Fort Benning.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it is possible to reach people who are religious with a those religious ideas which are for peace. And I think it's a wonderful thing that people are doing this.
Howard, as I quoted from your book earlier, the book ends bringing us right up to current times. And you've included in there a writing, a letter from the Rodriguez family, whose son died in the Twin Towers on 9/11. Could you comment on that?
Well, one of the things I'd point out is that the book comes right up to the present day, and it includes a letter that this family, the Rodriguez family, sent to President Bush right after 9/11. And their son had died in the Twin Towers, and they wrote a letter to Bush, which we print in Voices of the People's History. And in their letter to Bush, the Rodriguez family says, you know, our son would not want retaliation for what happened on September 11th. He would not want us to go to war and kill other innocent people as people were killed in the Twin Towers. It's a very moving document. And the reason I mention this is because it's so pertinent to the situation we're in today, where this idea that you can react to terrorism with more terrorism, the idea that you go to war in order to protect yourself against terrorists, I mean, people need to think about that, and people need to realize war is terrorism. Retaliation with violence is still violence, and it maintains then an endless cycle of violence. That's why I think that particular reading in the book is so important for understanding what is happening today.
I'm very glad you mentioned that, because Phyllis Rodriguez was on this program shortly after 9/11, and I remember her very well.
Mm.
But it speaks to a lot of the hypocrisy that surrounds us all the time, every day.
Well, Kathy, it's really good to talk with you. All the good work you're doing.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful to be with you today here on Voices of Our World, Professor Howard Zinn. Thanks, Howard.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Do you believe you have the right to disagree with your government? Would you feel safe voicing your views? Email us. Go to www.marynoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Howard Zinn is just one of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Casey Morabito. You heard the song Paradigm by Ani DeFranco from her Knuckle Down CD. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guest, please go to our program's website, www.marynoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.marynoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.